Stone, and this is Year by Year. In 1956, the topics on everyone's lips were civil defense, Peyton Place, a snake-hipped young man named Elvis Presley, and tension with the Soviets. The Cold War was building, and the United States tested the hydrogen bomb on the small island of Bikini Atoll. At home, people practiced air raid drills and elected Dwight Eisenhower president of the United States in a landslide victory. In the newsreels of 1956, we'll see these stories and more, including the revolution in Hungary and Grace Kelly's fairy tale wedding. Now, Year by Year, 1956.
At the end of a six-day fight that astonished the world and shook the Kremlin to its foundations, Hungary was free. Free to fraternize on its own borders and rush in supplies to the stricken city of Budapest along roads littered with burnt-out red tanks, disabled by almost unarmed men fired by passion for liberty. Flaring swiftly from student demonstrations into open revolution, the pent-up hatreds of oppression sent Russian might reeling and forced withdrawal of the red yoke. But even as these scenes were recorded, rumors flared of the re-entry of Russian forces and new fighting. The beautiful city of Budapest, scarred by conflict, again faces a Russian onslaught, even before the debris of the fight for freedom is cleared from the streets. In startling developments, Hungary broke with the satellite Warsaw Pact military alliance, announced neutrality, and pleaded for priority on the United Nations agenda. Then word came that Russian forces were massing, and all communication with the West was cut off. Hungary's newfound freedom is menaced before the martyrs of revolution go to their rest. Once again, the threat of flood disaster hovers over Yuba City as the Feather River menaces the levees guarding the town. Unceasing rains create the same conditions that a few short weeks ago submerged the community. Engineers closely watch the rising waters and phone the alarm as the crest rises ever higher. With the situation reaching the crisis stage, weary residents prepare to evacuate for the third time in 6 weeks. Still sodden from the previous flood, citizens who were trying to dry out from the inundation which cost 34 lives form a motorcade to take refuge on higher ground. To date, the floods have taken a toll of $179 million in damage. And for storm-battered Northwest, the end is not in sight. Leather has come into its own style-wise, and we've come to Briarcliff Manor, 35 miles north of New York City, to show that the proof of the putting on is in the wearing. Leather for the life of leisure, simple and fashionable. Americans are wearing more leather this winter than in the days of Dan'l Boone. They even wear it with coonskin linings, which doesn't mean that leather is at home only on the range. It has come to town, both for city streets and for dressy evenings at home. The styles shown were created for Philip Sills by the young designer Bonnie Cashin, who works with leather as a sculptor works with this material, to bring its distinctive qualities into the finished product. From leather-lined boots to hooded coats, a modern miss can select a colorful wardrobe all in leather, with alluring trim and adornment to fill a feminine wish for something new and different. Heartwarming to any gal also warmed by a roaring fire is this ensemble. Halter of green suede and short skirt of blue suede, done to a turn. Plateau of Hurricane Mesa in Utah for Air Force supersonic research. Here, a rocket sled tests pilot safety equipment by simulating the fantastic stresses of supersonic flight. The sled streaks down a 2.5 mile track, gaining velocity steadily. At peak acceleration, the dummy is ejected to hurtle over a 1,000-foot cliff, the most drastic trial of the safety gear that spells life or death for America's airmen. In New York, it's the 29th Intercity Golden Gloves Championships and New Yorkers underdogs against the Chicago Sluggers. In the 126-pound sub-novice bouts, Harlem schoolboy Vince Schomo moves in on Chicago and Bill Duclos. One of the most stirring slugfests in the series. Schomo strikes like lightning to finish it off. In the eighth bout, New York leads in team points. This is the heavyweight championship. Rugged Johnny Harper, Dark Trunks, facing southpaw Booker Stanton of Chicago. Harper lost the first round, and he opens cautiously in the second, but not for long. It's a ripping sandwich attack that has Stanton reeling back on the defensive. Both glad to hear the bell. Harper wins the crown and New York wins the title. As the threat of wholesale war looms in the near and Middle East, the 2nd Battalion of the 8th Marines, reinforced and with complete battle kit, embarks for the Mediterranean on six ships of the Atlantic Fleet from Morehead City, North Carolina and Norfolk, Virginia. The Leathernecks will augment the manpower of the 6th Fleet, now stationed in the Mediterranean, ready for any emergency. Even as the Marines leave, new violence erupts in Cyprus, North Africa, and Palestine. And Americans hear President Eisenhower warn that a general war in that area would be a world catastrophe. And as usual, the Marines head for the trouble spot. And Americans hope that they don't have to land. Ritual, United Press correspondent Robert Basler is inducted into Buddhism at the famous temple at Phnom Penh. Mr. Basler had come to cover the coronation of the King of Cambodia. With shaven head and the saffron robes, he kneels before the superior of the monastery. A simple ceremony in the presence of all the members of the Pagoda Monastery is completed as he kneels facing the superior. Remain in the order for a day, a year, or his whole life. Actually, he intends to remain a month in an atmosphere of complete austerity and seclusion. At the Fantasia Theater in Hollywood, a celebrity-studded crowd gathers for the 28th Academy Awards ceremonies. Past Oscar winners, such as Frank Sinatra, and promising young starlets and industry leaders. And contenders for awards, among them James Cagney, gather for Hollywood's own recognition of its finest achievements of the year. Ernest Borgnine is named Best Actor of the Year, receiving his Oscar from Grace Kelly in what may be her last Hollywood appearance. A moment of double significance for the audience. Jerry Lewis presents the Oscar for Best Actress, awarded to Anna Magnani. It's accepted by Marissa Pavan for the Italian star, who was unable to be present. American Saber jets arrive in Japan for transfer to that nation's small defense force. A major boost in effectiveness for the Nippon Air Force and the beginning of a possibly significant realignment of strength in the Orient. The plane's protective cocoons are stripped and the airframes thoroughly overhauled by United States airmen and Japanese technicians working side by side in preparation for the first flight of these first-line warbirds. Pilots trained by the United States 5th Air Force for the transition from propeller craft are briefed for the flight that catapults Japan into the jet age. The nucleus of a technically modern Air Force, its future yet to be decided in a major political debate now shaping up in Tokyo. Pilots, some of whom fought against Americans, now fly as allies. Something new in Motomania debuts at Soldier's Field. This fearless foursome is the Cytrix group, famous in Britain but appearing here for the first time. There's a lot of, you might say, reverse English to their stunts. Notice that the hands almost never touch the handlebars. They take four men to do the hard way what one can do with ease. Hard is hair-raising, but there are tops for new and interesting ways of riding a motorcycle. Assuming you want to ride one at all, you might want to stand instead. You'll take the low road. Riding high for the rest of the show are the Transworld Auto Daredevils, all of whom returned alive from a 76-city tour of Europe doing just this. Talk about hot rods. That car was new. Here's what they do to the old ones. How to grow old gracefully. Just take a flyer in the stock car business. Leaping lizards. Egypt's President Nasser rejects the Western bid to attend the Suez Conference in London and receives the solid backing of the Arab world in his seizure of the key waterway. But an Egyptian observer is dispatched to London, where 22 nations are meeting. India's Krishna Menon is one of the prominent diplomatic troubleshooters present, representing neutral interests, as are, technically at least, members of a huge delegation from Moscow, headed by Russian Foreign Minister Shepilov. Only Greece and Egypt, of the nations invited, refuse to take part. Even as the talks get underway, England's latest luxury airliner is drafted for a huge airlift of troops to Near Eastern bases. But Secretary of State Dulles's proposal that Egyptian ownership of the Suez be recognized in return for international control was a major concession by the West that raised hopes for a peaceful settlement of this explosive issue.
When Year by Year returns, Don Larson pitches his way.
In an epic seven-game struggle, arch foes the Yankees and Dodgers battle for the World Series crown. Mickey Mantle climaxed the season in which he won the triple batting crown, while Yankee bad boy Don Larson made history in the fifth contest with the first no-hitter and perfect game in World Series history. One of the great thrills of the year, a year of enduring sports achievements everywhere, from Don Larson in Yankee Stadium to Australia. Italy's foremost high fashion designers join in showcasing their coming lines with a gala presentation at Villa Giulia. The emphasis is increasingly on elegance and ensemble. Nearly every style shown had an accessory jacket, coat, or mantle. For a nippy fall afternoon, tweed dress and jacket. And for the evening, the designer calls this Iceberg. Cool blue silk dress, neatly belted, and over it a striking redding coat in green silk. Like an iceberg, impressive on sight and a lot beneath the surface. Imperia, true to its name, dominates an aristocratic group. White lace dress, black velvet mantle, fit for an empress. Caterina de' Medici, black velvet that recalls Renaissance grandeur. And the high point of the collection, Eleonora Garnett's embroidered evening dress. It's called Notte Splendente, Night of Splendor, both a promise and an understatement. It's the mighty Swaps against the field as he calmly awaits the call to the post in the Sunset Handicap, where a record crowd jams the sands. Swaps is entered at the fantastic odds of 1-10. After toying with the field during the race, Swaps turns on the heat in the stretch, with Honey's Alibi making a vain effort to close the gap. But the flying four-year-old keeps increasing his lead as he roars down the track in the mile-and-a-quarter $110,000 event. He crosses the finish line with a new record under his saddle, his fourth this year. The fabulous flyer receives a 10-minute ovation. Few worlds remain for Swaps to conquer as he enters the ranks of Turf's Immortals. Ten attention mounts around Convention Hall in Chicago as nomination time approaches and delegates stream in for the big session. Again, Adlai Stevenson is the man of the hour as banner headlines proclaim his imminent nomination as the Democratic standard bearer for 1956. Inside the hall, more than 1,000 delegates prepare for the climactic moment when they will make their selection. New York's big delegation backs Governor Harriman's unsuccessful bid. And among them is that veteran of many conventions, former postmaster, Big Jim Farley. The contest has narrowed to Stevenson and Harriman, as ex-President Truman, a Harriman backer, and Mrs. Truman look on. Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt is another prominent convention figure. In his nominating speech, Senator Kennedy refers to Stevenson as the man with all the qualities for world leadership. The Democrats have made their choice, and as it was 4 years ago, it is Adlai Stevenson who promises a fighting, vigorous campaign for election. Teenagers from 14 states gather in Reno for the 8th National High School Championship Rodeo. There's not a pro in the bunch. No money prizes. The youngsters do it for the fun involved. And a trophy if they come out on top. Well, he's on top, but not for long. Thrills there are, and spills. Ooh, what spills? But there's nothing soft or sissified about the rock and roll teenage cowboys. My head. Top or bottom, there's a lot more bruise than just a young man's dignity. Win or lose, the resilient youngsters carry on in the finest tradition of the Old West. Take to the hills, men. These bucking broncs are flunking everybody. Class dismissed. The climax of the Republican convention in San Francisco is reached with the arrival of President and Mrs. Eisenhower. They are greeted at their hotel by a wildly cheering crowd. Many had waited all day for a glimpse of the chief executive, who arrived a day earlier than planned. An air of expectancy hangs over the Cow Palace as the time for the chief business of the convention, the nominations, approaches.
I now place a nomination as the candidate of the Republican Party for President of the United States, the name of the most widely beloved, the most universally respected, the most profoundly dedicated man of our times, Dwight David Eisenhower.
This is what is known as acclamation. The president's nomination is followed shortly by that of Richard Nixon as his running mate. Picture of delegates who see eye to eye.
Still to come on Year by Year, Ike takes the country by
national fame, and Khrushchev denounces Stalin in the Soviet Union.
In the little Cumberland, Pennsylvania township voting headquarters near Gettysburg, America's first citizen signs the register as the nation goes to the polls in a history-making election. Together with the First Lady, the president is among the early voters. His Democratic opponent, Adlai Stevenson, with son Borton, arrives at half-day Illinois to cast his ballot. At the four corners of the nation, democracy is at work as voters flock to the polls in unprecedented numbers. As evening returns come in, the trend is unmistakable. It's Eisenhower by a landslide with 457 electoral votes to 74 for Stevenson. And a 9 million vote plurality. At the annual Farnborough Air Show, Britain makes a new bid for aviation leadership after years of lagging production and disappointed hopes. An impressive array of new types are shown, and high-ranking Russian officers are among the observers shopping at the show window of British air power. already in service with several NATO nations, as well as the RAF, is the Hawker Hunter. Here it is fitted with the Fire Flash, Britain's first air-to-air missile. But the Hunter can carry a wide assortment of guns, cannon, and rockets. Adaptable to meet many combat situations, it's a fast and deadly fighter-bomber. Noted for speed are the twin jet Canberras and the Royal Navy Supermarine Swift. Delta Wings bulk large in British hopes. This experimental craft holds the world's speed record. Newer V-Wings are Britain's trump cards in a play for survival. University plays host to judo wrestlers from many states as well as Hawaii assembled in ceremonial garb for the 4th U.S. Judo Championships. The coveted black belt, symbol of the expert, is proudly worn by top-ranking competitors in the ancient sport of Japan. Now sanctioned by the AAU, judo is more and more popular in this country. Uniforms, customs, rules, and commands originating in Japan are retained. Judo is a way of life, besides being an effective way to defend oneself. And like baseball, a grand slam is also effective. The Air Force, which regards judo highly, has two teams entered in the Slam Bang tournament. The ceremonial shirt takes a beating, along with the guy who is wearing it. Now it's his turn, so it would seem. But it's deadly serious, and the fans love it, right down to the oriental bows and handshakes between victor and vanquished. The Chicago team wins national honors. Judo champions. Brookfield Zoo in the spring. Come on, Junior, drink your milk. It makes babies big and strong. What a big baby you are, and what a handful. He couldn't do that to a full-grown rhinoceros, but you're a baby. Butt is right. Mr. Buttinsky, the lion cubs call you, and you were afraid they'd think you snooty. What a pity. A butting romance turns into a spat. Oh, well. Easy cub, easy go. Grandpappy Porker has his nose up in the air, but he's not snooty. Just snouty. Official greeter for the new children's zoo is this baby orangutan. He just loves children. Children love him too, but he's just wild about himself. Crossroads of the Americas is the setting for a conference of 18 Western Hemisphere presidents. President Eisenhower, still convalescing, flies in to attend the two-day meeting. He is greeted by President Arias of the host nation and a full turnout of the diplomatic corps. As president of the largest and richest nation in the Organization of American States, Ike is looked to set the tenor of the meeting. Conducted informally, the meetings re-emphasized hemisphere unity in a time of increasing world tension, culminating in a five-point declaration of common principles and highlighted by President Eisenhower's proposal of an inter-American atomic development plan. It was a mission of two-level diplomacy for Ike, weaving closer ties of friendship with our good neighbors and soundly rebuffing Red propaganda slurs by his presence despite his recent illness. Open, interest focused on the Winter Olympics at Cortina d'Ampezzo. Hayes Alan Jenkins gave a stylish performance on the ice to win a gold medal, followed up in the women's division by Tenley Albright. Still in extreme pain from a recent leg injury, she showed courage to match her gracefulness, a real champion. America swept the artistic event, but on the alpine slopes, it was another story. Tested their mettle on one of Europe's toughest, trickiest downhill courses. Austria's Toni Seiler won the slalom, giant slalom, and the downhill too. Olympic skiing's first Grand Slam. Track and field history was made in Los Angeles Coliseum. Australia's John Landy made his American debut and was upset by fellow Aussie Jim Bailey in a sensational race, the first 4-minute mile run in the United States. later, 19-year-old Charlie Dumas cleared the 7-foot mark in the high jump, a long, soft feat comparable to the first 4-minute mile. Olympic diving tryouts were a treat for connoisseurs of the graceful. Pat McCormick took top spot and went on to win in Melbourne. Barbara Sue Gilders took second place. And third among the curvesome contenders was Jean Stunye. High-diving mermaids, and pretty. Mermaids on the move in the women's AAU meet at Tyler, Texas. In the butterfly, a new record set by Shelley Mann, who went on to an Olympic victory.
Still to come on Year by Year, civil defense tests and the...
Seconds tick off. Far below the target island of Namu stands outlined with a cross of lights and its radar installation. Once again, weather planes make a last-minute check. A brilliance of 500 suns lights hundreds of miles of the Pacific, and the force of a million tons of TNT is released. Seconds later, the light is still unbearable. Observers may well squint, or they may have witnessed a prelude to world destruction. The most rigorous test of America's civil defenses is coordinated from this Washington Nerve Center, a simulated hydrogen bomb attack that strikes at 75 key targets from coast to coast. Here, every phase is followed as if the attack were real. In the cities, police and civil defense teams clear the streets. Meanwhile, from the Pentagon and other key points, top defense figures are airlifted to secret control centers, where they would direct America's defense and counterattack. 10,000 federal employees were evacuated from the nation's capital. Only the beginning of a 5-day study, a searching scrutiny of how America would fare. It was estimated over 4 million would have died in New York City. No estimates were given for the rest of the country. But the grim arithmetic took on new impact for all who took part in Operation Alert. Of the world's most beautiful girls share the spotlight at Long Beach Municipal Auditorium, where the winner of the coveted title of Miss Universe is to be chosen. From Argentina through Venezuela, from Iceland through Ecuador, there's a truly international array of beauty here, vying for fame in the 5th annual Miss Universe competition. Brunette, blonde, redhead, fair skin, dark, everyone a worthy claimant of the title that carries with it a fabulous list of prizes, including a 1-year movie contract. Miss USA, Carol Morris, is the chosen one. The second time in the history of the contest an American girl has won. Last year's winner, Hellevi Rombin of Sweden, crowns Miss Universe 1957. The daughter of an Iowa minister, a Drake University swimming champion, dark brown hair, blue eyes, proportions 36, 25, 36, and 5 feet 7 inches tall. She stands on the threshold of fame and fortune. In auto racing, Indianapolis staged the big show this year as usual with the 500-mile Memorial Day Classic. 33 cars started, but a chilling series of accidents knocked 12 from the race, luckily without loss of life. The winner, Pat Flaherty, redheaded and lucky. Mayhem on wheels marred Europe's motorcycle season. Tragedy struck at Vienna when Austria raced Poland. 20,000 horrified fans saw one daredevil's luck run out. He took a chance and lost. But his reckless cohorts of sport continued to challenge fate. Near Rouen, they were defying the weather, too, spending as little time on the muddy ground as possible. But you gotta come down in the goo once in a while. What a soggy, boggy affair. Something only a mudder could love. One flying saucer with airplane attached. No cause for excitement. It's got nothing to do with Martians. A saucer didn't capture the airplane, it's more the other way around. A Navy super constellation that's toting the largest, farthest-seeing airborne radar ever flown in that 30-foot ray dome. Despite its odd superstructure, the big Lockheed handles with ease. The fuselage carries tons of electronic equipment associated with the giant antenna in the saucer and a crew of up to 31 men. First flight for the Flying Flapjack, a new and far-seeing radar vision to guard America's sea lane. Suez Canal, storm center of controversy for weeks, now becomes a cause of war in a lightning sequence of diplomatic and military moves. Since its seizure and nationalization by President Nasser of Egypt, the vital waterway has precipitated a new crisis in the already tense Middle East. Crack French units are embarked at Marseille, bound for a joint staging area with Great Britain on Cyprus. Less than an hour's flight from Egyptian ports, where they are prepared for seizure of the canal by force. Simultaneously, Britain reinforces its garrison on the island for the same eventuality. A naval concentration in the eastern Mediterranean strengthens the military buildup, even as Israel, in a lightning attack, thrusts deep into Egypt to the vicinity of the canal. France and Britain issue a 12-hour ultimatum that all fighting must cease. Within hours of its expiration, Britain's warplanes are winging their way to Egypt, and its bombers attack five key cities, including Cairo. Following a Security Council veto by Britain and France of a United States motion for a ceasefire, President Eisenhower, after consultation with Secretary of State Dulles, makes a firm declaration of United States policy.
The United States was not consulted in any way about any phase of these actions, nor were we informed of them in advance. In the circumstances I have described, there will be no United States involvement in these present hostilities. I therefore have no plan to call the Congress in special session. Of course, we shall continue to keep in contact with congressional leaders of both parties. It is our hope and intent this matter will be brought before the United Nations General Assembly. There, with no veto operating, the opinion of the world can be brought to bear in our quest for a just end to this tormenting problem. In the past, the United Nations has proved able to find a way to end bloodshed. We believe it can and that it will do so again.
The whole question is brought before an emergency session of the General Assembly, where it faces the bar of world opinion. This is the death of liberty in Budapest. Encircled by units from 15 Red Armored divisions that have poured into Hungary, patriots fight to the last ditch as they attempt to eradicate hated Soviet books and flags before being ground under the iron heel of Russian juggernauts or being exiled into Siberia. While there is still time, thousands, both military and civilians, stream toward the Austrian border and the freedom they have bought so dearly. More than 10,000 succeed in reaching the haven, carrying with them the pathetic remnants of belongings they have been able to see, of uprooting in horror and armed oppression. The avenue to freedom is brief. As night descends on liberty behind the Iron Curtain, a ring of red tanks blocks the last road to safety. The last of the Hiroshima maidens depart for home after a year and a half of plastic surgery in this country, which diminished but could not remove the scars they bore from the Hiroshima atom bomb. Living reminders of the horror wrought by the atom bomb in its first use against civilians, they say now that their sacrifice was worth it, if only the atom is never again used in war. Right up to the minute, both in transportation and in dress, the first ski birds of the season migrate to the Bear Mountain Inn, hopeful of snow. There is no snow in New York, but that's snow, never mind, because the emphasis right now is on fashions. They're all dressed for snow in their white stag ensembles for winter sportswear, colorful outfits that will light up any festive occasion. They call them tow jackets, washable poplin, water repellent with little trimmings of fur to warm a womanly heart. The well-dressed ski instructor gives a loud hurrah for zipper pockets in his handsomely striped jacket. They help, and help is the word, whatever the interpretation. For skating, this ensemble gets a big vote. Corduroy pants topped by a sweater adorned with a gay scarf in matching hues. Yep, Jack Frost is calling. At last, the truth about flying saucers. They're real, just as real as Santa Claus, that's what. And we've got 10,000 Allentown youngsters to back us up. They greeted old St. Nick as he made his first 1956 appearance. Santa greets his greeters with gifts and a gala party, as is his custom. The flying saucer carries lots more Christmas cargo than reindeer. Where are the reindeer? Why, back at the North Pole, honey. But don't you cry. Santa is still Santa. Christmas is still Christmas. And kids are still kids. 100 Hungarian refugees are welcomed by Governor and Mrs. Goodwin Knight as they arrive at International Airport for resettlement in the Bay Area. As the first contingent arrives on the West Coast, the welcome is especially warm for the fugitives who escaped with little more than their lives. Mrs. Knight is particularly touched by the plight of the children and displaced mothers. Some only recently in the center of Hungary's drab brutality are overcome at the sight of friendly faces and the enfolding arms of America. In the Golden State, a new life, and above all, the friendship of free people. It's not news when good neighbors go golfing. It is when they're heads of good neighbor nations. President Eisenhower and Prime Minister Saint Laurent of Canada tee off for a friendly round at the Augusta National Club in a foursome which includes the Prime Minister's daughter and Ed Dudley, club pro. Mr. Saint Laurent and his party stopped off for a brief sojourn while en route to Ottawa from Florida, where they had been vacationing. Ike had a better score than his distinguished guest, but in team play, they came out even. And the trip around, well, that was a breeze. Football's greatest individual award, the Heisman Memorial Trophy, is presented by Downtown Athletic Club President George Hall to Paul Hornung of Louisville. The handsome quarterback for Notre Dame, who's been tapped for Pro Bowl, was selected for the honor in a poll of sports writers and announcers. An honor all the greater considering his team's poor showing on the gridiron this year.
When Year by Year returns, the tragic voyage of the Andrea Doria. Stay with us. July 25th, 1956, in thick fog off the shores of Nantucket, the Swedish ship Stockholm and the Andrea Doria collided, resulting in the loss of 51 lives.
A murky dawn reveals what might have been the greatest tragedy in sea annals. The luxury liner Andrea Doria lies almost on her side after a collision with the Swedish liner Stockholm in dense fog 45 miles off Nantucket Island. A 45-foot gash in her side was cut as the Stockholm's icebreaker bow knifed into her hull. The Stockholm, her bow completely smashed, limps back into New York under her own steam, carrying 500 of the Andrea Doria survivors in addition to her own 550 passengers and 500 crew. Rescue vessels in the Times Square of transatlantic shipping lanes were on the scene preventing an appalling loss of life. Seriously injured are flown by helicopter to Nantucket, among them an 8-year-old girl. Four are known to have been killed outright in the disaster. It is the beginning of the end for the 29,000-ton vessel which cost $29 million to build, as the water is strewn with the belongings of her 1,134 passengers. 11 hours after the tragedy, the proud liner is nearing her final moments as a Coast Guard cutter stands helplessly by. Going down with the Andrea Doria are examples of modern Italian art worth $1 million by themselves. As though reluctant to die, she lies awash for minutes before the death blow is dealt. At last, the inexorable sea claims a gallant ship. Meanwhile, into New York Harbor steams the Ile-de-France with 758 survivors after heroic rescue work in the night and darkness. Many of the victims were separated from families during rescue operations by five ships, But this large family group was lucky and remained together. On the pier, relatives of 1,600 passengers seek their loved ones, not knowing on which rescue ship they are arriving. Indeed, a miracle, with 2,500 persons cheating the sea of its prey. Beauty on Parade, first in Atlantic City, where 50 hopefuls representing 46 states, Chicago, the District of Columbia, and Canada wage war with beauty, poise, and talent for the Miss America crown. Also at stake is a year-long tour of personal appearances, many thousands of dollars, and a college scholarship. The field is narrowed down first to 10 semifinalists and then to 5 finalists as the judges seek that elusive combination of looks and talent that will mark the one. From 50 to 10 to 5, and now, one and only. She's 19-year-old Marion Ann McKnight of South Carolina, embraced and then crowned by last year's beauty queen. Here starts a busy year for a blonde and bright belle from Dixie, the new Miss America. Beauty has its educational aspects, too, as demonstrated at Asbury Park, New Jersey. College queens vying for the national title. Judging from all the consternation, anatomy is not a dull course at school. It can be quite inspiring. Betty Coed is up to date, and the judges are up to snuff when they say, the winner is Marilyn Meyer from Texas, who says, who, me? Yes, honey, you're learning fast. Ain't education wonderful? Forest Hills, Long Island, for the finals of the U.S. men's singles. The racket is tossed and the die is cast as Lou Hode and Ken Rosewall, both Australians, square off before 12,000 fans. Seeking a grand slam of amateur tennis, Hode serves. He has already won the Wimbledon, French, and Aussie championships. Now he sets out to wrap up the U.S. nationals and make it 4 in a row, the way Don Budge did 18 years ago. He wins the first set, 6-4. Rosewall serving. The tide turns as Rosewall puts it away to take the second set. The crowd senses the beginning of the end for Lou Hode's grand slammer. A brisk wind seems to bother him more than his dark-haired opponent, who plays unbeatable tennis as he rolls on to set number two. This wasn't Hode's day, and the fans know it now. Hode serving, set and match point coming up. Lou can't get it back. And Rosewall's racket describes a victory arch. Lou Hode missed his grand slam, and Ken Rosewall is the new U.S. singles champ. In the world of golf, a thrilling final hole marked the Masters at Augusta. Well-liked amateur Ken Venturi led by 8 strokes going into the final round, but collapsed as rival Jack Burke climaxed a great rally to hole out 1 stroke up to win the title and $6,000. For Jack Burke, the green coat of victory. In the National Amateur Tourney at Lake Forest, defending title holder Harvey Ward holed out 5-4 to become the first 2-time amateur champ in 21 years. One of man's dreams, space travel, takes preliminary form in a Washington research center. The skin of the Earth's satellite is buffed preparatory to its launching within the next 2 years. The sensitive electronic instruments which will send its messages back to Earth from 300 miles are put in place. They will tell the still little-known story of outer space as the sphere spins around the Earth at thousands of miles an hour. Exposed to undreamed-of stresses and temperatures of thousands of degrees, the satellite will be a supreme engineering feat as well as a pathfinder into the realm of outer space. Here is a model of the 72-foot rocket that will carry the satellite to its orbit, circling the Earth as a minor moon and a prophet of things to come.
Since the early 50s, nervous parents had been alarmed over juvenile delinquency. But in 1956, Elvis Presley and the frenzy his hips created gave a focus to their worries. Teen culture came into its own that year. When Rebel Without a Cause star James Dean was killed in a car crash, he quickly became a cult hero to thousands of alienated adolescents. To the grown-ups of America, These brooding young rebels represented a threat to order and decency, the very same order and decency that were made vulnerable by the lurking menace of Russian communism. The Cold War was steadily escalating in 1956, and anxiety was in the air. This has been Year by Year. I'm Karen Stone.
Thank you. sugar time.
Sugar time.
See how this comes out. I'll repeat it over and over and see if we can... Okay, we're going to start again. This time we're going to try to get it halfway right. 1928, Wings, the first Academy Award. 29, Broadway Melody. 1930, All Quiet on the Western Front. 31, I guess that's right, Cimarron. 32, The Grand Hotel. 33, Cavalcade, Titanic. 34, It Happened One Night, Clark Gable. 35, Mutiny on the Bounty, again Clark Gable. The Great Ziegfeld in 36 and 37, The Life of Emil Zola. 38, You Can't Take It With You, I think Jimmy Stewart. And 39, Gone with the Wind. 19, that's again Clark Gable. 1940, Rebecca. 1941, How Green Was My Valley. 42, Mrs. Miniver. About the war. 43, Casablanca, Old Humphrey. In 1944, we have Gone My Way, Bing Crosby. 45, Lost Weekend, Ray Milland. 46, Best Years of Our Life. 47, Gentlemen's Agreement. 48, Hamlet. That's 1948, Hamlet. 1949, All the King's Men. 1950, All About Eve. 1951, An American in Paris. 1952, The Greatest Show on Earth, The Circus. 53, From Here to Eternity, Frankie. 54, On the Waterfront, Brando. 55, Marty, Ernest Borgnine. 56, Around the World in 80 Days. 57, The Bridge on the River Kwai. 58, Gigi. 59, The Great Ben-Hur. 60, The Apartment. 61, West Side Story. 60, Saudi Arabia. 63, Tom Jones. 64, My Fair Lady. 65, Sound of Music. 66, Man for All Seasons. 67, In the Heat of the Night. 68, Oliver. 69, Midnight Cowboy. 70, Patton, General Patton. 71, The French Connection. 72, The Godfather, Part 1. 73, The Sting. 74, Godfather, Part 2. 75, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Number 76, Rocky. Number 77, Annie Hall. Number 78, The Deer Hunter. 79, we had Kramer versus Kramer. Next page, 80. Yes, Ordinary People in 80. 81, Chariots of Fire. 82, Gandhi, Life of Gandhi. 83, Terms of Endearment. 84, Amadeus. 85, Out of Africa. 86, Platoon. 87, The Last Emperor. 88, Rain Man. 89, Riding Miss Daisy. Number 90, Dances with Wolves. 91, The Silence of the Lambs. 92, The Unforgiven, Clint Eastwood. 93, Schindler's List. Okay, and now we continue on. We correct the file a bit. We just did 93, Schindler's List. Now at 94, we have Ed Wood. 95, Braveheart. 96, The English Patient. 97, Titanic. And last year, the one I believe is here. Over.
Whether else I could read them.
Last year, I forgot it.
Okay, last year we had Saving Private Ryan. Welcome to the 21st century and a happy new year to all. Okay, now continuing on with the list, we have for the year 99, American Beauty. Kevin Spacek in it, which gets the Academy Award.
The year 2000. Who have we got as our winner? Let's see. All right, we have the winner of the year 2000. It's The Gladiator with Russell Crowe.
Movie.
Now in the year 2001.
Winner? With a... A Beautiful Mind with Russell Crowe, the winner in 2001. Hi, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. The year 2001 going to 2002, and here we are.
Thank you.
happy Halloween, everybody, from the year 2001. And this is Johnny on the Wind Mixer.